Don't go tonight. Stay here one more time. Remind me what it's like. And let's fall in love one more time. I need you now by my side. It tears me up when you turn me down. I'm begging, please, just stick around. I'm sorry, don't leave me. I want you here with me. I know that your love is gone. I can't breathe, I'm so weak. I know this isn't easy. Don't tell me that your love is gone. That your love is gone. Don't tell me that your love is gone. That your love is gone. I'm sorry, don't leave me. I want you here with me. I know that you love. Your love is gone. That your love is gone. Mm-hmm. I can't breathe, I'm so weak. I know this isn't easy. Don't tell me that your love is gone. That your love is gone.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Call Me Negotiator, broadcasting from Vancouver, Canada. And this is a cross-cultural and interdisciplinary talk show where we bring together people from different cultures, backgrounds, and fields to exchange ideas, experiences, and perspectives. From communication to education to art, technology, business, and everyday life, we explore what we can learn from how people from different cultures see the world, communicate, and make their life choices. And before we get into today's conversation, let's kick off the show with a little taste of Chinese food culture. China is a huge country, and every region has its own distinctive flavors and specialties. From beloved local classics to some pretty adventurous dishes. Today, let's start in Chengdu, Sichuan, with one of the most iconic food, Sichuan hot pot. Sichuan hot pot is famous for its mala flavor, that combination of spicy heat and the slightly numbing sensation of Sichuan peppercorns. But it's more than just a flavor. Hot pot is also a very special experience. Friends and family gathered together around the same bubbling pot, cook together, eat together, and usually talk for hours. So, hallelujah. Have you ever tried Sichuan hot pot?
I've never tried Sichuan hot pot specifically, right. But I've had like hot pot in general with like friends of mine in Vancouver. I don't know if it's quite as spicy though. I don't know if I have the best spice tolerance.
Yeah, okay. I think they do pretty good in Vancouver about like Chinese food making. But I'm not so sure. I always think they never reach to the most authentic level than the Sichuan hot pot that I had in Chengdu, Sichuan. But I want to know, what about your cultures? Is there a food you personally love or something from your culture that you'd recommend everyone try?
Oh, yeah. My background is Ethiopian. And I think the biggest cultural export that Ethiopia has is obviously coffee.
Oh,
from Ethiopia.
Yeah. Wait, but if anybody from South America, will they have fight over it with you?
Well, no, it's from us. It's from us.
Oh, really?
It is from
okay.
us. But in Ethiopia, we do like a traditional coffee ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
It typically involves like you have the coffee is like roasted in front of you. A very important part of this is like that it's like a sign of respect that once the coffee is roasted, the host would like bring it up to you and you have to smell it to make sure that it's like prepared properly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's brewed in a special kind of container, which is called a jebana. And it's like a similar thing with like hot pot where you're not supposed to have like a traditional coffee ceremony with you and one or two friends. It's with a big group of people. You're chatting and you have like coffee's usually really strong, and so it's served in a really small cup.
Okay.
And you sip and you have a little bit, you know some more over and over again. It's a very fun kind of social thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like the cultural thing in, you know, Vancouver, BC, where you go to Tim Hortons and you get your extra large double double.
Right.
My mom did not like that when she first came to Canada. She's like, why are people drinking cheap coffee in these big cups? It's like, oh, coffee's supposed to be social. And
But they consider that's cheap.
Well, no, like Tim Hortons coffee, I mean, it depends. Like,
right.
It's a little bit cheaper than like
Starbucks.
Like Starbucks, yeah, well,
yeah.
Starbucks is pretty expensive. It depends what you order as
right.
well. But if anybody listening is afforded the opportunity to like go to a traditional coffee ceremony, I recommend it. As well as I know some restaurants will do it, but it's a little bit more expensive than.
Okay. Well, like, since you bring this up, I kind of want to explore deeper about coffee selection because I'm not so good at it. But like, seems like if I go to a market and there's some tons of coffee powders or beans for me to choose, maybe I should look for Ethiopia's one or
well, it's more
Colombia
complicated
one?
Than that. It depends. Oh. Do you make coffee at home in the morning?
I feel like I do, but I do in the really not authentic way.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
It's just like if you have it in a machine versus
right.
I do it in like a French press. Mm-hmm. Some people do pour over or have an espresso machine. That's what decides which beans or how you prepare it or whatever. There's so many like different ways you can consume coffee. Like there's a Turkish coffee is really interesting.
Right.
Where like
super strong one.
It's super strong and usually like the grounds sometimes are at the bottom of the coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know that's an important part. And Vietnamese coffee is also really strong.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And that's with condensed milk, and it's all made differently, so the beans are different then.
Oh, I see. Because I feel like the proper process supposed to be you grind everything from bean to powder,
mm-hmm.
and then put the powder in some kind of machine, or you hand make it. I'm not so sure. Like that's what I'm saying. Like even way everybody, almost everybody that I know in my life drink coffees, but we don't even necessarily know it that well, but I do feel like whoever produces this or created this, I'm not so sure if I should use create, but like they found this and they really did really good cultural sharing, that kind of thing, or cultural marketing in terms of how they push this to the world. I don't see everybody's eating hot pot, but is it? Kind of like everybody's eating hot pot. Maybe they have their own version of hot pot.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Everybody has their own version of coffee. And I love coffee. I have a problem. I joke about it in the office that I have like 4 or 5 cups of it minimum a day. But which isn't like I'm not a stereotype. Like, I don't know if the average Ethiopian has as much coffee
okay.
as me. But there's so many ways to consume it. Like my preferred way in the morning is like the French press. But my biggest tip, if you want a good cup of at-home coffee, is to buy like a grinder. So instead of buying it like pre-ground at the store
mm-hmm.
for like 15, 20 bucks, you buy like a little. I grind it every morning before I make it, which doesn't take long, but really, I think, changes the flavor profile and lets you adjust it. So, like, if you're lucky and you have an espresso machine, which I want one, but they're too expensive and I don't have the space for it, that requires a different kind of bean grind versus French press or machine. Or you could go the easy route and spend $8 on a coffee every morning at a coffee shop, which is fun too.
Which is, yeah, I do feel like that's why I ask, like, do people consider grabbing Tim Hortons or even Starbucks every day? Is it considered something like not money consuming habit? Because it is, right?
It's so expensive.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if I grab it once in a while, definitely it's okay. But like, if I have this, because I feel like if you are into coffee and then you definitely do it sort of like every day. I do have a cup of coffees every day. But since you talk about your culture, that's really what we wanted to explore. Could you share a little bit about your background? Because you seems like, did you grow up here in Vancouver, Canada?
Yeah, I grew up in Burnaby, so basically yeah, Vancouver. Okay. But I immigrated here when I was about a year old. Both my parents are from Addis Ababa, which is the capital city of Ethiopia. Different neighborhoods, though. They came here, yeah, I guess 2004, about a year. 2004, 2005, maybe? Addis Ababa is a huge cultural hub right now, and Ethiopia is also like a hugely dense cultural hub. My parents only speak one dialect mainly, which is Amharic, which is what I speak. Both my parents speak a little bit of the neighboring like languages, but there's like over 80 ethnic groups within the country, and a lot of them have their own languages and dialects. There's an incredible food culture. Ethiopian history is very long and winding. Like, there's like a lot of like a huge amount of like UNESCO like heritage sites. And the last time I traveled to Ethiopia was about 2018, I think. I was really lucky to do a like 5-city kind of hometown travel tour there, where I got to see some really beautiful sites, like Lalibela, which is like an 8-church system, like that they built, like carving down with tunnels and stuff, which is pretty high altitude. Baharda, which is the blue, like near the Blue Nile, and I'm forgetting Aksum, which is like these stone obelisks that they used to put up, like when a great leader died, you'd put up a very tall, winding stone obelisk, and the more respected they were, the taller they were. Lots of great sites to go to.
Right, that sounds like could be a competition.
I could imagine.
Yeah, right. But like, in you mean like in each part of the within the Ethiopia?
Yeah, that actually was like, that was one city that did that. I believe. I don't know. I'm not a historian.
Okay, yeah. But you do know a lot about your culture, though.
I think it's important, like, right. Especially like, I identify as somebody who's like from the African diaspora. Like, I don't live there, but I'm a visibly like, you know, somebody who's from African descent. And I think for a lot of people who are in any cultural diaspora, I think it's an important part for me and my story to learn as much about my culture as I'm not like getting to grow up there. And I think it helps like with your own identity as well. Like, it really doesn't matter which specifically like culture you are, but when you are growing up somewhere like in Vancouver, where it is like a melting pot, and there's so much like that I can take from, like, I'm happy that I got to grow up somewhere so culturally diverse, but I also want to make sure I'm bringing something to share, you know, to the hot pot of life.
you're so right about it. I think that's one of the reasons I also like hot pot. It's more like I like this diversity for culture as well, where I like somewhere like New York City or like Vancouver is because they are so diverse culturally, and you get to talk to people who are from different places. Especially extremely interested into the topic where they really have something to talk about their culture, because sometimes now and then, and like you meet people who they deny their culture or identity. I'm pretty sure like every single one of us have sort of like that kind of experience where you get confused, but then I kind of understand everybody has their own opinions based on their own life experiences, but I realized that this is something, it's undeniable, right? So when I see people who are excited about like knowing their culture more when they grow up in the place like Vancouver, I think this is just amazing. And you mentioned about your parents, they came here and they did they know how to speak English when they moved to here?
They learned a little bit, like people in Vancouver often like know how to speak French, but not like like, you know, like they could speak it, but I don't think they truly got the most out of the language until they immersed themselves and it was every day of their lives that English was kind of a part of. Both my parents spoke like Amharic, which is the dialect that I speak, and they speak is in the same language family as like Arabic, so they spoke Arabic pretty well. But I don't know, like a lot of people who are immigrants in places like Vancouver or New York can speak a bunch of languages, so they learned English pretty quickly, being surrounded by it and having to practice it all the time, especially with some young children.
Right, so you can speak your Ethiopian dialogue.
I can speak it a little bit. I can speak it like conversationally pretty well, but I actually can't read it. The alphabet is pretty long and complex, but I'm hoping in the next year I'm going to sit down and actually learn it.
Okay, that's awesome. Like, could you maybe say something, or maybe like self-intro or introduce your culture in the dialogue so we can experience a little bit about it?
Sure. Forgive me if there's anybody that actually speaks Amharic. You can correct my grammar. Salam. Sumi Halleluyano. Ine yahun yawarangno radio ule kagwadinyay. And yuswagwadinyay uchusumwingno ahun.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That sounds not as so unfamiliar. The accent doesn't sound, you know, something that's so from somewhere so far away. It feels like a combination of, like you said, like maybe French, a little bit English and Arabian. Or, yeah. I'm not so sure, but like that's how I feel. Could you explain to us? What did you say?
I said, hi, my name is Hallelujah. I'm on the radio talking to my friends and with her friend, like listening to her friends. But yeah, the language is like, I think a Semitic language. So Amharic is like, essentially there's a lot of ethnic groups in Ethiopia. A lot of people who are Amara speak Amharic, but also Amharic is, I think, one of the more spoken languages in the country. It's in the same family like of languages as like Arabic, so it shares like a lot of vocabulary. So I said salam, which is just the same thing in Arabic, and you know, like if I was, because of like, you know, colonialism, Italy tried to colonize Ethiopia twice, so there's like weird Italian language like words sometimes that come up in casual conversations. Often when I say goodbye, I say ciao. Like, you know, like there are things like that. Like we use the word piazza a lot, which is an Italian word for like, you know, like plaza. I'm trying to think, there's other ones like but that's like the funny thing about like I guess living in a modern world, you share a lot of words from different cultures. And yeah, no, there's a random bits of Italian and Arabic that are just intrinsically, I think, a part of like conversational language. Like it wouldn't be like formal, like you wouldn't use like what is it, like I know a lot of languages have like a lot of that weird influence from neighboring cultures and stuff.
And you mentioned about like the 80 neighborhoods or something like that. That's like the regions or places like, you know, like provinces or cities within Ethiopia, or I'm not so sure what like that neighborhoods mean or represent.
I'm no expert on this. From my understanding, there's like different regions and states. Like, you know, an interesting thing that I think across like the continent of Africa, there's like areas that are more city and areas that are more rural. And respecting like, you know, that people want to live rural lifestyles, and also respecting that people want to live city lifestyles. So there's I think 80 plus, I can't remember the exact number of ethnic groups, so like cultural groups that are separate from each other distinctly. And then there's also states. And then there's sometimes even more cultural division amongst like people who have different like religious practices as well. So there's like a lot of separate culture amongst like a pretty huge diverse amount. And, you know, discussing colonialism again, but there are some cultures, ethnic groups, and people who speak the same language that, you know, just drift across like neighboring countries' borders. So an umbrella term that is used very often amongst people who live in the area of Africa, so not just Ethiopia, but in neighboring countries like Eritrea or Djibouti, is the term Abisha. Abisha is just like kind of like a sweet like nickname for people who are of the entire region. So you know, somebody from Eritrea isn't Ethiopian, but there's like some shared culture, even if they might speak a different language and have slightly different cultural practices, you would still call them Abisha.
Oh, okay. Abisha.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure like my accent
No, you got it.
Okay. Okay, so I can just call people right there when I go there.
Yeah. If you go to Ethiopia, if you go to Eritrea, and like both countries like have people that would identify as like Abishan.
Okay.
Abisha is like East Africa, like in that Horn of Africa. If I had a map, I wouldn't say like anything exactly, cuz like it's easy to put like a line in a map and be like, these people are exactly like this. But like, there's so much that culture can be. And like, you know, I'm living in Canada. I'm not in that part of the map, right?
Like, I see. Like, I'm just curious, do they have a general language? Like, for example, like English, or for Chinese, we speak Mandarin within like almost like all Chinese, even Chinese who are in Hong Kong. Their main language is Cantonese, but they mostly who are educated speak Mandarin. But we have our own dialogue. But I heard that India is somewhere that actually people don't have a general language like English or Mandarin, so they actually have a problem communicating with each other if they don't speak similar or the same dialogue or English, and that really surprised me. So I know those things exist. Is that something that in your...
Yeah, I haven't traveled like a huge amount city to city, but I only speak one of the dialects. And when I was traveling within Ethiopia, I found it really depended what state you're in, what language. So like if I was in a certain part, like if I was in the capital, like you'll find somebody that speaks whatever of the main four, there's about four or five, I think, really commonly spoken dialects, which off the top of my head are Amhara, Amharic, Oromonya, Tigre. Those are the three that are coming to mind. But I remember traveling really far. I think it was when I was in a city called Aksum, when I was in the Aksum area, that although I could find some people that spoke the same dialect to me, it was mostly a lot of people that spoke like a Tigre language or dialect. A lot of people, because of like, you know, how many different ethnic groups there are, speak multiple languages. So like, you can, I think, get your way around. Like, I've heard a lot of people who live in Europe also pick up lots of different languages if I'm really close.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to make sure that your face are not blocked by the mic. But yeah, like, I want to know that, because I've never traveled to that place. I've been to Egypt.
Oh, yeah.
And South Africa. But I think there's just so different than Ethiopia. However, when I was in Egypt, I hung out with people who did volunteers in Ethiopia, and they seemed really happy. I think like that part of Africa is the most developed or rich place in the world, but like it doesn't seem like affect your emotional states, right? But I don't really know, because Vancouver is a place where you can meet people who immigrate here everywhere, but most of the people who immigrate here, they are just very talented or hardworking. So I guess your family is kind of like that, and they made these choices with some reasons, or maybe they like places which is more like diverse cultural places, and I want to know what your opinion about which one is better, which one fits your preference, and how did that affect your life choices, or, you know.
Yeah, I would always say that if you're given the opportunity to travel, to always take it. Like, if you, you know, have the opportunity and you get a scholarship to go to school somewhere, but it's far away from home, and, you know, if it won't ruin your life, you should always take it. Like, I think there's something so innately important with seeing other cultures and stuff. And I'm really happy that I got that opportunity. It was largely a decision of my parents to, like, come to Canada. And they'd wanted to come to Canada, especially to have a family, because of the amount of, like, cultural inclusion and sharing that you get. And I was lucky in that way. My dad lived in Romania for a little bit, and that was a very formative experience for him as a young person to leave, like, Addis Ababa and get to go to another country, meet a bunch of other people who had come from different cultures to study and learn a new language as well. But yeah, like, I very often, like, growing up here, like, I would meet people who had never, like, left Vancouver. They had never gotten the opportunity to travel, whether it be through life circumstances like money or not a curiosity. And I never understood that, because I feel like my parents always instilled, like, and as well as, like, the culture around here instilled in me that I'm like, there's so many places I want to see. Like, I always had friends who were from very different cultures, and I always wanted to tell people, like, if you get the opportunity, you should visit where I'm from. That I never understood when somebody was like, I grew up here, I stayed here, and I'm going to stay here forever, and I'm never going to see anybody.
Right.
It's so weird.
Yeah, I mean, like, I can relate to that a lot, because from Vancouver or from everywhere, I've been to many places, and I used to live in the New York City, and obviously that's one of the most developed places in the world, but when you meet people who are locals and then they feel this kind of privileged attitude, like, they have this kind of privileged attitude where they from there and then they've been there for, like, ever. And the interesting thing is people who have been to more places and see a bigger world, they normally have, like, more open-minded kind of attitude, and that attitude kind of affect them to take actions to be able to explore more, also to be able to get more opportunities, because that's kind of like the main way of how you kind of meet opportunities, right? And I do feel like the world become more globally, no matter if you admit it or not, right? Like, it's just more like cross-cultural, and that really makes me feel that I learn a lot from it, and that's also affect how I choose and build my career. So I'm interested in what you are studying, and have you figured out what you want to be, or even have an idea? Because I know we change our dreams and career path all the time, but yeah, like, what are you studying and why you're interested in that?
Yeah, I study what's it called, jazz studies at Capilano University. I already did a diploma in contemporary music studies at a smaller college called Selkirk College, which is in Nelson, but 7 hours from Vancouver.
Okay. Oh, so you actually travel to somewhere else, study, get your degree, and then come back. And you're studying music still?
Yeah, I'm still studying music. Music is always what I've wanted to do, and I still want to do it. Mm-hmm. I ended up moving to Nelson because, you know, speaking about traveling, it was like an old friend of mine who said something like, if you're going to work in the arts, you're going to be spending most of your life in cities. Mm. This is the only time you're going to get a chance to live in a small town. So Nelson is it's a lot smaller than Vancouver.
Right.
And it's in a pretty beautiful region of British Columbia called the Kootenays. Mm-hmm. And I decided to go to school there at first because it was the pandemic. And if I went to school in Vancouver or New York or Boston or whatever, I would have to, like, do it in lockdown, basically. Mm-hmm. And I went, well, if I'm going to be stuck in the middle of the woods, I might as well be somewhere beautiful. And
right.
So I did 2 years there. I took a year off to, tour and record. And then I decided to go back and finish my bachelor's degree. So I have a year left in my bachelor's in jazz studies, but